Hello everyone and welcome back to the Knee Down Podcast. My name is Matt Grant and today I am going to be doing a solo podcast episode regarding the Mugello Grand Prix in MotoGP. Now, as I mentioned, it will be a solo episode, but I think I have enough to cover and questions to ask you guys to make this a podcast still not to be missed. So, tell you what, let's get into things. No guests, no riffraff. Let's talk about Mugello. So first things first, the start of the Grand Prix was absolutely fantastic. The brand new Mugello Renaissance liveries from the Ducati team looked fantastic, and action was pretty much straight off the bat. A fantastic experience to watch from both a neutral, a fan of Marquez, a fan of Paco Bagnaia, and a fan of Alex Marquez as well. To hear the crowd roar and erupt when they heard Paco Bagnaia get through was a feel-good moment for us all, especially for a rider who's not doing particularly well at the moment. Now, a couple of overtakes really made it reminiscent of the good old battles that we have seen between Pecco and Jorge Martin, that infighting between the two factory bikes, whether they're the same colour or not. And this time, some excellent, awesome footage of pair of them, and Alex Marquez included, just throwing lunges. And I found something that maybe a lot of people have missed or haven't really talked about is that none of those overtakes really made it stick. And none of those overtakes were actually that clinically done. And what I mean by that is that usually when a rider overtakes, there's then no option for the other rider to get through. But going into the likes of turn two, the Luco corner, as Pecco went through a mark, he runs it wide, which then compromises his exit for the Borgo San Lorenzo corner for turn three. Then into Matarazzi, Marquez goes through, puts himself in a situation ready to go onto the right-hand side again, before we get to Casanova and Savelli. The dynamic was very interesting, and none of those overtakes were really one and done. So I really enjoyed that when I was screaming here, watching on the big telly behind me, and it was just a fantastic experience. Let me know what you guys thought about it, especially if you're a Marquez or Pecco Bagnaia fan. It's always that little bit more enticing and exciting when you hear that your favourite rider, or you see the favourite rider do something great. And I think having the crowd in the background roaring when Pecco got through, to shock and disbelief when he touched the rear tyre of Marc Marquez. What an excellent battle that really didn't last as long as I wanted it to. I thought this could be the turning point of Pecco's season if he got the better of Marc Marquez, but it kind of looked like Marquez was just taking his time. And once he got through and he made that decision, it was goodnight Vienna. And then Alex Marquez made that move and, of course, settled in for second place, which he's done so excellently this season. So first and foremost, let me know what you guys think about that in the comments section down below. I thought it was a terrific fight and I'm hoping to see more of it. But ultimately, it was cut short. I really felt like it could have gone on longer. And a video I've done already, which will be coming out on the channel very soon, is the conversation about that make-or-break mentality for Pecco in this Grand Prix. It really felt like a fairy tale was about to be created. You know, the fact that Pecco has had his woes this season, he struggled, which has then all of a sudden changed into a monumental win against one of the greatest riders of all time. Didn't happen. I think it would have been better for a fan perspective, especially from a neutral side, because yeah, Mark is amazing and he's going to win more races this season, but it would have been nice to see the championship be a little bit tighter and maybe a little bit of leeway to the other side of the camp. We all love racing, but it's more exciting when the championship is tighter or neck and neck, let's say. But it was a fantastic race, and I've got to give credit to Fabio Di Giantonio towards the end there. I mean, I'm pretty much spoiling the race at this point, but I'm hoping you have already seen it, or at least seen the results. But Fabio Di Giantonio came on extremely strong towards the end, and it looked like, I think if there was a lap or two more, he could have caught up to Alex Marquez as well, which I don't think I expected. The VR46 Ducati looked absolutely sublime this weekend as well, by the way. I think it looked really good. Northern Lights on the Mugello track is the angle. But that move into Casanova and Savelli by Digia was unbelievably good. Really impressive. I know Pecco was fading a bit, but any time you see a rider lunge into Casanova, the downhill section, before moving on to the left-hand side and then the right for Arrabbiata 1 and 2, amazing. Simply amazing. I think it's probably my favourite overtaking on the entire MotoGP calendar. Whenever you see riders, Mattia Pessini was massive for this in Moto2. Every time, going down into their quick change of direction, bang, it was beautiful. C'est magnifique. Well, that's French, but you know what I mean. It was molto bene. It was absolutely amazing. A couple of things as well I wanted to mention. I've wrote a few things down here as well, such as why... excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself here. about the KTMs as well, because turn one, Enea Bastianini's race ended. Turn one in the sprint, Brad Binder's race ended. So KTM had a bit of a shocker, but there was one little glint still knocking about, and that's Maverick Viñales. You know, there was every chance he was going to qualify even better than he already did. And there was every chance he was going to catch up to Pecco Bagnaia in the sprint. Now, I'll be honest, I've done my knee down bingo card and I didn't even mention Maverick Viñales on there. I never once felt that Maverick was going to gel with the KTM. If there was anything I would have said with the KTM, it would have been Brad Binder. Maybe Pedro Acosta would have been still the leading KTM rider. Brad Binder second, and Enea Bastianini and Maverick Viñales. Completely proves how wrong I was, as Maverick Viñales is now becoming the face of KTM. And we'll touch on his departure from the Grand Prix in Turn 4, but we'll get to that. But I thought Maverick looked fantastic this weekend. I'm really, really impressed with how he's gelling to that KTM. Whether they'll consider a change in the future, maybe promoting to the factory team, whether that would make a difference, are still very much factory supported in some regard. But I do believe that Maverick can have another great result this season. We had the podium Qatar, similar style track with Mugello, a little bit more undulation, of course. So it is working out well, and using the top end speed, which is the fastest bike in history of MotoGP, it's definitely going to pay off. So if we look at some more tracks like Catalunya with another long straight, could be very helpful there. And Phillip Island, we know Maverick goes well at Phillip Island, so there might be a chance that we do see a Maverick podium. I'd love to sit here and say we'll get a Maverick win, but Marquez is, they're not beating the Marquez brothers at the minute, unfortunately. It's not looking likely, at least. But stranger things have happened. Marco Bezzecchi won in Silverstone. Johann Zarco won in France. So, yeah, we are getting different winners, and it is exciting. But back to Mugello. Let's briefly talk about Pecco. I don't want to go into too much detail, because, as I say, I've already recorded a video, which I do hope you watch. And yeah, it's full of the conversation about Pecco's mentality at the moment of making this Mugello Grand Prix his weekend to find everything. I don't even mean just find a little bit, everything, just all that confidence again, all that feeling of being successful, no longer being in the shadow of his teammate Marquez at the moment, just getting back to the norm, getting back to the feeling and the late breaks that we saw from last season. But I do feel that Mugello was one of those make or break races, and I think it's broke. I don't think it worked. Next time out it will be Assen, so it's another great track for Pecco Bagnaia. Do we do a do-over? Make or break in Mugello? Okay, never mind, it's still broke. Let's make or break in Assen. I don't think you can. Not when you're 110 points behind your teammate, and not when your teammate's Marc Marquez. Food for thought, ladies and gentlemen, but as I say, got a more detailed video coming very soon, so get subscribed if you're interested. Now, I will jump to Marquez, because I don't know how to say this. There's nothing else to be said. This is not a surprise for the Marquez fans. They knew, trusted, believed, and adored that Marc would do this. And you've got to give them credit, they were right. They were bang on. Give Marc Marquez the best bike in the world, you'll result in great things, I'm telling you. So they were right, and Mugello was one of those tracks that Marc is not the favourite. Definitely Pecco would have been the favourite. He was the favourite going into it, and ultimately it didn't work. But Marquez has got that scary consistency like the old champion Marquez, 2019, 2018, 2017. Distant, it just... You watch it to think that, oh, he's dropped to 7th in the sprint. Maybe he won't finish on the podium. Within 3 or 4 laps or 3 or 4 corners, he's already back to the front again. I know he technically didn't drop behind those riders. It was just sort of on par. And obviously superior on the brakes anyway going into San Donato. But it just seems that even when there's a slight glimmer of, oh my goodness, Marc might not do well this day, it's quashed immediately and Marc flies back to the front. And he did that exactly in Mugello. Even when Pecco got through, Pecco fought him, Pecco touched his rear tyre, Bagnaia went through, Bagnaia didn't go through. Marquez was just, I hate to say it, but I don't think he was toying with him. I think he was just biding his time, waiting for that moment. You know, it's okay, you can pass me here, I'll pass you back. You can pass me there, that's okay, I'll pass you back in this next point. But if it really felt like he wasn't going to win, I don't think he would have put himself in that situation. I think if anything, it hindered Pecco for losing so much tyre, so much grip. And that's when his problems come. He loses that front end feel. He gets tremendous vibration on the bike. I mean, you can see it. in Mugello, it was so clear. He gets snaps on the bikes. The bike snaps and the bike moves. It doesn't look comfortable. Where Marquez is just nailing it. It doesn't matter to Marquez that the rear wheel might be up in the air. It doesn't matter if the bike snakes around. That's what he likes. He likes a loose motorcycle. He'd been riding the Honda, which is probably the loosest bike over the past couple of years, and he made it work. So I think for Marquez to have a bike which he's got that does have a few problems, because I don't think it's the GP24. I've been in a few podcasts now. I've invited Craig from the IUM Motorsports team numerous times, and we've always discussed this. The GP24 has the potential of being the better bike. It's just that Marquez is so damn good with the GP25 that he is working round those problems. It might be an old or stale story at this point, but Pecco is having front-end problems since the very first test. Marquez probably having them problems, but just riding through. Where Marquez's comparison is the GP23, Pecco's comparison is the GP24. So Pecco says this bike's not as good, where Mark says this bike is so much better than the GP23, but not knowing how good the GP24 was. Look at Alex Marquez. His jump from the GP23 to 24 has been night and day improvement. So there's definitely a possibility that the hierarchy of Ducatis could be GP24, GP25, and whatever version they'll run next season. Who knows? But enough about Marquez, enough about the factory Ducati dominance. I could sit here and praise him all day, but there's plenty of fans who do that enough already. So moving on to the next point. We mentioned Maverick Vinales, and we also mentioned the fact that he was about to finish. Probably he would have finished on the podium if he wasn't taken out. And he was taken out by a familiar name here, Franco Morbidelli. Now, I really like Franco Morbidelli. I think he's one of the most underrated riders, and I think he's quite excellent. He's finished every single race within the top five. He quietly goes around his business, but does so many silly mistakes. Bumping riders, slowing down in front of riders, just genuinely being a pain in the backside sometimes, and not in a nice way. He just shuts off and does some silly things. And unfortunately, even Uccio Sellucci had to give it the old sharp intake between his teeth. Not a good move. And it ruined Maverick's race. Destroyed Maverick's race, to be honest. And, you know, there's a lot of fans I've seen in the Instagram comment section. Yeah, there's not... You don't always get the best comments in the Instagram comment section, but a lot of people calling for a ban. A lot of people calling for some sort of suspension, more long lap penalties or something. And I think I agree. I think we need to put an end to this. Just like they do in Moto3, when someone starts doing something out of the ordinary, they are slapped with a penalty. Look at Jose Antonio Rueda in Silverstone. He got involved with someone else's lap time, back of the grid you go. Think we might need to do something drastic like that, because it's the only way riders will learn. And riders are a different beast. They will see that they've made a mistake. They might think, well, Maverick didn't pick up. He knew I was there. He's seen the 21 on his pit board. There's always a counterpoint or an argument. But I do strongly believe that I am agreeing with the census that Franco needs some sort of penalty. A metaphorical slap on the wrist I don't think is enough. I think we need to take a little bit more harsher action. I do really like Franco, and I don't like the penalty route, because then we get the problem where riders don't overtake and then the riding gets stale. You know, there's a lot of criticism to Alex Marquez not overtaking Marc Marquez, but will attack Pecco. That has been kind of quashed because Pecco said it himself. He doesn't ride the VR46 boys like he does with anyone else. And I'll be honest, I don't care who you are. You will always have a preference and sense of motivation to overtake somebody. Now, I'm not a racer myself, but I'm guessing a lot of you guys are. And a lot of you guys can feel this. If there's a rider in your class, in maybe some national racing you do, or even if it's club racing, you will feel differently about him to another rider. It's just natural. We as humans take preference, and we do have favourites. So if there's a person that you don't particularly like, you will go elbows out. If there's a person you have a lot of respect for, maybe they're fighting for a championship, maybe they gave you a part a few days ago in a club race, you're going to think, okay, I'll let him through on the overtake because I know it could be a bit sketchy here. The fact that you thought about it means that there's some sort of preference that you're giving him rather than the others. I get it. I don't like it either because I know Alex Marquez can beat Mark, depending on the situation, but he hasn't tried yet. When those moments have come where you think, go on, Alex, go on, turn four, you can get... He didn't go for it. He was close enough. So I get it. I get it from a fan perspective, and I get it because I would really like to see Alex Marquez fight Mark. I think that could be some of the best action we'll see all season. But It'll come. It'll have to be a situation which is right. Maybe Alex is fighting for second in the championship. Maybe the championship is already done and Mark doesn't need to win, so Alex might go for it. I think the situation has to be right. And once it's done, we should see a little bit more interesting racing. The fact that Pecco has never really fought the VR46 boys is probably the reason why we don't really talk about that much. And the other VR46 riders are not at the level that the two Marquez brothers are right now. So I don't think we can really compare it yet, because we need to see it at the same situation. But, and enough about that, because I've got another topic to speak about regarding the Marquez brothers, and that's the booing. We've seen that fantastic clip of Davide Tardozzi pulling the red Ducati shirt, screaming into the grandstand that, you know, Marquez is one of us, you're booing one of us. Now, I get it, and I think that's a lovely sentiment from Davide Tardozzi. He cares for Marquez, he cares about Ducati, and he doesn't have time or the acceptance of people booing a legendary rider like Marquez. Now, I have gone back and forth on this because I agree. I don't like booing riders because at the end of the day, they are heroes. Every single one of them. From Somkiat Chantra in MotoGP to Marc Marquez to Uriarte in Moto3 to Aaron Canetti in Moto2. I don't care what level of discipline you're in. You're a hero. You're racing for our entertainment. You're a hero. You're awesome. So booing them is disrespectful in a way, I understand. But at the same time, emotion makes MotoGP. Emotion makes sport. So having that sense of, nah, no, I don't like him. No, go away. Boo, he beat my favourite rider. Generates more interest for the sport because we've seen over the past couple of years the rivalry, friendship we've seen over the years where everyone is quick to say, well, good job, credit to my other rider, credit to, you know, Pecco Bagnaia, credit to Martin for beating me in the World Championship. Oh, credit to Pecco, he's beat me in the World Championship. We're not seeing, oh, don't talk to me about him, I'm not interested in him. We're not seeing the wall built up between Rossi and Lorenzo. But then you got to ask yourself the question, which is more interesting? The Rossi-Lorenzo, the Rossi-Marquez feud, the Lorenzo-Pedrosa feud. What's more interesting, that or the everyone pats each other on the back and says, good job? I think I know which one I'm picking. But I also don't like the vitriol that comes from booing and negativity. Because it's not booing because they've won, it's when they cheer when someone's crashed. That's where this draws a line from being a fan to a thug. If you're cheering that a rider's gone down and possibly hurt themselves, you're not a real fan of the sport. You are there for some sort of gladiator-style arena carnage where riders are getting hurt and the people in front of you inside the Colosseum are dying to the animals or maybe some sort of a vicious situation they've found themselves in with a guillotine. That's a bloodlust side to it where I don't agree with. I don't want to see any rider crash. There's a morbid curiosity to riders crashing. You watch it, you see it, you tense up, you react, you see them hit the barrier and you're head in hands. Something about that is that our curiosity, which is morbid. But cheering for a rider crashing is where I draw the line. So, in a roundabout way, I'd like to ask the question, what do we think regarding booing riders? Now, I'd love to hear this from the Marquez side of it, and I would also love to hear it from the neutral side. Because booing is nothing new. It's not exclusive to Marquez either. We've always seen it. The Italians don't get on with the Spanish don't get on with the Italians, and even everywhere else. Certain rivalries just happen because of the nature of those nationalities. So, interesting question to ask you. Marquez being booed on the podium, Alex Marquez being booed on the podium, what's your thoughts? Is it warranted? Should it be accepted? Or should we squash it and say, no booing? If you're not a fan, if you boo. But I will counterpoint and say, when Marquez wins, the Marquez fans will instantly diminish another rider for Marquez's win. Now this is going to sound, whoa, that's a bit blunt. But if you check out the comments sections in your Instagram, your social medias, there's a lot of comments regarding other riders not being fit to lace Marquez's boots. These are a lot worse than this, by the way. I'm giving you the bog standard version. So when Marquez does something and you're told that the other guy's an idiot, Marquez is in his head, oh, the guy's crumbled, he's washed, he's whatever all the Gen Z slang is used nowadays, isn't that just as bad as booing the rider who won? Now, there's a thing called a sore loser, where you boo the winner, but there's also a sore winner, and that's who wins and still mocks the others that can't beat him. Now, Marquez doesn't do this. The fans do. Every single time I see any conflict between Marquez and Ryder B, Ryder B is slagged off to an eternity in the comment section, to the point where Ryder B can't do anything without being accused or being again slagged off. Look at Pedro Acosta, for example. Pedro Acosta made one joke in a chat show by pretending to not know who Marquez was. He replied simply with, "Who?" Now, every single time you see Pedro Acosta do anything on MotoGP, whether MotoGP posts, whether Pedro Acosta posts, someone, somewhere, is writing "Who?" in the comment section. What is the difference between that and booing? Is there a difference between that and booing? Or am I looking the wrong way? Maybe that's banter. Maybe the booing is not. Well, I'm curious to see what you guys think, because I would love to talk about this in more detail, because I think it's a very interesting topic that we'll never find an answer for. I just think we'll be able to find a middle ground. But yeah, all I can say is you won't find me booing and you won't find me slagging anyone off in the comment section. I'm a massive fan of every single rider and a massive fan of the sport in general. Hence the reason why I'm here talking to you guys on the channel Knee Down, which is everything for MotoGP. But shameless plug over. Let's move on. So this weekend then, we only saw Ducati. We saw a little bit of Honda and Yamaha, but not in a positive light. Fabio Quartararo didn't finish. I think he finished behind Oliveira. Jack Miller had a clutch problem. Johann Zarco crashed. Somkiat crashed. Joan Mir didn't have a particularly great race either. The Japanese factory struggled so much. Now, a quick mention, of course, is Fabio Quartararo had to put his shoulder back into place in the final corner, which I don't think anyone expected. But yeah, he had to have it shoved back in with a dislocated shoulder. So full credit to Fabio for riding on after that, qualifying into Q2, and even doing all right in Q2. Unbelievable. Fabio Quartararo is a warrior. But it was a big struggle. A big, big struggle for the Japanese bikes. And I don't know whether that was just a blip. Is that just because Ducati's dominance is so much superior? But they never looked good once. Zarco had a few moments going into Pecine, which is the final corner. Long left-hander where the bike just vibrates. A lot of riders don't like the vibration. Neither does Johann Zarco, but he tends to ride through it. But it didn't look good. And there's nothing to talk about positively from that weekend. I think it's one to just forget and move on. Move on to Assen, where I guarantee the Yamaha will be better. Would probably say guarantee the Honda would be better in there too, but I think the biggest difference we'll see is for the Yamaha factory bikes from Iwata. So good luck to them. But I want to give a quick mention, actually, because I don't think anyone's talking about it, really. Raul Fernandez finished both in the points in both races. A bit of a shock. I think Raul Fernandez this season has been talked about as if it's his last year. You know, there's not anything really that positive to be said. I know even myself, I don't think he'll be there next season. I think the Trackhouse team would rather have a rider like Manuel Gonzalez. And who knows, maybe someone else as well, because there's still rumours that Ayagura might go to the factory Aprilia team. There's rumours that Enea Bastianini might come to Aprilia. But for Raul Fernandez, he had a good weekend. I made a post about this on the Instagram channel. I really did think that Raul did well this weekend. Top Aprilia, top satellite Aprilia, behind Marco Bezzecchi in fifth, and he finished in seventh. So pretty solid performance, at least he did in the sprint. So yeah, shout out Raul Fernandez. What do you think? Do you reckon he's coming back? Do you reckon he's going to develop some rhythm? He did lead the sprint last season in Catalunya, don't forget. So there's every chance that Raul Fernandez could do well. But still sticking on the Aprilia theme, Ayagura come back from injury, so it's still a bit early to talk about how he did in Mugello. But we have to talk about Marco Bezzecchi. Another strong ride. Fifth place in Mugello. Good couple of overtakes in there as well. Had a bit of argy-bargy with the VR46 Ducatis. Really impressed with the way Bezzecchi is learning that Aprilia. Granted, the Silverstone was a huge win, but it was more a turning point for seeing how well Bez can do with the Aprilia. And I think it's a situational thing. If we get a race with similar conditions, a similar situation, you better believe Bez will go all for it. And he might even win again. But he's done an excellent job this season, and it's continuing. And let's just hope it does. It might even bring Martin back a bit earlier. Who knows, maybe he'll try it. But I think we'll talk about Martin another day, because I'm already beginning to lose my voice, and there's not really that much left to talk about, too. So, well, I guess we'll take a look at that next time. But We've really got to think about that in the future. But no, we're not going to get into it now. Unless you want to, let me know in the comment section down below. But yeah, let's, I guess, segue up now and start to finish off. But let's talk about then what it means for the championship. We briefly talked about Marquez, Pecco Bagnaia and Alex Marquez. Hate to say it, but it does look really good now for Marc Marquez. It's 110 points clear from Pecco, as mentioned. And I don't really think Alex Marquez can beat Marc. So I think everyone who said once Marc gets to factory red, he'll win. So, and I think I've wrote down another part here, is who's looking strongest in the mentality side of things? Well, we've just talked about him. 8 times world champion, possibly soon to be 9. 93 Grand Prix wins now for the number 93. Wow. Just wow. His first win came in Mugello, and now his most recent win has also come in Mugello. Something special about Mugello. And you know what? I didn't mention this earlier, but I kind of forgot. The booing in Mugello. I'm going to just quickly bounce back to this because the booing in Mugello does wonders for Marquez, and I don't think the booers realise this. When the fans booed Jorge Lorenzo, Lorenzo would go and stick 2 fingers up to you. Or he'd do the shark. What was it, the shark? Was it that? I can't remember, but I don't even know if you can see it. But when Lorenzo was the bad guy, the villain against Rossi, he loved it. It riled him up and it gave him that boost. Some riders don't like it. Casey Stoner was never a fan, but he never was a fan of anything. He was quite a even-keeled fella, just a little bit highly strung in some areas, but Casey Stoner wouldn't have enjoyed the booing, but I don't think he'd really cared for the cheers anyway. Stoner was there to do what Stoner wanted to do, and that was it. So it's not a bad thing, necessarily, to boo Marquez. If you're a Marquez fan, boo him. He'll probably just get faster. So it's like an extra power-up. He takes the power, those negative rays of booing, and pushes it into his own racing. Maybe they need to start booing Pecco. Maybe then he'll catch up. And I think that's about it then, guys. A final couple of questions or two topics to talk about. It's just a couple of things like Enea Bastianini's future, I wrote in. Of course, I did a video on this last week regarding where he's going to go. Haven't seen anything new yet. But I've also seen there's a little bit of upset regarding Pedro Acosta now in KTM 2. So I don't think the KTM saga's over yet. I don't know if Pedro Acosta is going to stay. He said he would, and now it might have gone back again. And Enea Bastianini just looks fed up. He just wants to go. So the KTM dilemma is something I'm going to have to really dive into. And I think we might have to start talking about contracts that get tore up. It could be a topic for a future video, which I would love to make for you guys. So definitely stay and hear about that. And of course, which team is under the surface at the moment? And I think every team is under the surface. I think the VR46 team might have found something, though. It was Mugello, and the yellow crowd do boost the yellow bikes. So there's a definite chance that could have been a blip. But maybe DiGiantonio is slowly going to start building power. You know, this is his second podium of the season. It was 2 years since his last podium before the one in COTA. I think it was. So that's a good boost. A 50% improvement. 100% improvement. Yeah. Good job for Fabio DiGiantonio. I think we'll see him again on the podium this season. Just wondering which track. Maybe something like Misano? I guess we'll find out. But I guess last bit then, guys. A couple of questions for you guys. If you have a suggestion you would like to see, join me on the next podcast. Let me know. And yeah, I guess that's about it for me. I don't want to take all your time because it is just me. And I am conscious that you've heard just my voice for however long this podcast has been going on for. So guys, thanks for listening or watching wherever you may be. It's something different today, I appreciate. So if you don't like the solo podcast, let me know. Of course, it isn't the best way of doing things, but I wanted to try something new. And also just to try something for you guys, because you deserve the content. And I know some of you guys just like listening to what we talk about. So yeah, there you go. But let me know if you've got any suggestions in the future of a possible guest we could have on Knee Down. But yeah, that's it for me before my voice disappears. So guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you next time. Ciao for now.